Check with a kid on Father's Day. We'll make it, though. It'll be all right. So, today, I am going to talk about fathers, but I'm going to talk about it in light of spiritual leadership. Before I do that, I do want to give you one little quick fact about Father's Day. Now, I'm not making a statement through this fact. I'm making no conjecture. I'm making no point. You can do with it and make what snide remarks you want with it at your own discretion. But on July 19th, 1910, the governor of the U.S. state of Washington proclaimed the nation's first Father's Day. However, it was not until 1972, 58 years after President Woodrow Wilson made Mother's Day official, that the day became a nationwide holiday in the United States. Again, I make no point by saying that. Whatever snide remarks you choose to use that for is up to you. So, a little quick story, I'll make a few points, and then I'll tell the story that kind of ties everything together. And it is, one father had a 3-year-old daughter who was having trouble sleeping through the night. She'd often wake up several times because she was afraid. Each time as he retucked her into bed, he would remind her that Jesus was with her and he would keep her safe. Several nights in a row, she did this over and over again. Finally, one night, the dad asked her if she'd prayed to Jesus to take her fear away and help her fall asleep. She said, "Oh yes, I prayed to Jesus. He told me to come get you." So, my kind of theme this morning will be both for fathers and also spiritual leaders. And it's this idea of guide, guard, and direct. Now you notice that this is the same phrasing we use often when we pray. You know, "Father, will you please guide, guard, and direct us?" And I think this is appropriate because God is our greatest example of what a father and what a spiritual leader should be. The verse that I feel like kind of ties it all together, our mission as spiritual leaders, is 1 Corinthians 16:13. And it reads, "Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage, and be strong." So, guiding, guarding, and directing. First, we have to guide. Now, something we all know, me especially, oftentimes kids aren't particularly intelligent. I know this because I'm not particularly intelligent at times. But they never learn if they are led. Now, you got to understand what I'm saying. I'm saying that as spiritual leaders, we need to guide. And also, when I say children, I also mean spiritual children. You know, as Christians, once we move past this spiritual milk, when we move on to these solid foods, an example used in the Bible, I believe it is our calling to become spiritual leaders for others. Spiritual leaders for children in the faith. And it doesn't matter what age these people are, but once we move past that, it is our job as Christians to help others along, to become spiritual leaders. So when we guide, we can't lead. What I mean by that is oftentimes we get frustrated when people don't understand. So what do we have a tendency to do? We have a tendency to grab them by the hand and to drag them along with us, kicking and screaming no matter what. What's the problem with that? The problem with that is we never give them the opportunity to learn. And in guiding, you're still there with them. You're not just saying, "All right, this is what you do, now go do it." With guiding, you're still there with them. You explain why they're doing things. You don't just say, "Stay away from that." You tell them why. You don't just say, "All right, take this path." You tell them why. You explain to them why they're doing what they're doing. You explain to them what things mean. And as parents, you do this with your children, but also as spiritual leaders. I think the verse that kind of sums all of this up, especially for parents, is Proverbs 22:6, something we're all familiar with. "Start off children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it." So spiritual children as well as actual children, if we will guide them along this correct path, if we will show them why they're doing what they're doing, if we will show them what to do, then once they start on that path, they will not depart from it. So as spiritual leaders and as parents, we must first be guides. We must also guard. Children, and again I mean both actual children and spiritual children, must be guarded physically and spiritually. But guarding a child physically, it's in our nature. It's instinct. But sometimes guiding them spiritually is not so instinctual, and it's also much more difficult. Because we have to find a balance when it comes to guarding one spiritually. We must allow them to be tempted. We must allow them to make their own decisions, or they will never grow. But at the same time, we cannot allow them to be overpowered. In Mark 9:42, it says, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a great millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea." Well, on the surface we see, all right, so we shouldn't lead them astray. We shouldn't cause them to sin. But I think this is also a calling to spiritual leaders to protect these spiritual children and children alike from these sins, to protect them from these people that would lead them astray. So, as spiritual leaders and parents must guide and they must guard. Finally, they must direct. Now, there's a very distinct difference between guiding and directing. When I think of guiding, think of you're there beside them. You're not leading them. You're not leading them by the hand. You're letting them make their own footsteps, but you're standing beside them, guiding them. But eventually these children or spiritual children get to a point in their journey where they need to go out on their own. But they need to know how to do it. Many things they've learned by being guided, many things they've learned already, but they need some sort of direction. They need some sort of explanation. So that's where direct comes in. This is what we teach those who are our spiritual children, those that we are spiritual mentors for. These are the lessons that we teach them. The lessons that we teach and say, as you go out into the world, this is to be the direction. This is the direction that God has called us to. So you're no longer standing there beside them. You're no longer standing there beside them, guiding them. Now you've taken a step back. Now it's from a distance. Now you're directing them. And at that point, they can then start to move into the spiritual solid food. They can move into their own journey and soon take on others to guide and guard and direct. We've got a little story that I think illustrates this. It's an example of guiding, guarding, directing the correct way and the incorrect way. And it's a pretty humorous story, but there's an important point on it. Miles from Monrovia, the Trekathon. Y'all heard about it a million times as me and Mike were getting ready for it. It was our big fundraiser for Africa. And a very successful one, I will point out, thanks to many of you. But as we get ready, there are two team members who desperately want to be there. Or at least they say that. Now, probably they were guilted into it because they felt like the rest of the team was going, but they desperately wanted to be there. There was two girls. One a sophomore, one a senior, and they just desperately wanted to be there. Well, me and Mike kind of talked to them. We went, you know, do you have any backpacking experience? No. Okay. Do you have any hiking experience? Yeah. Fall Creek Falls. All right. You sure you want to go? Yeah. All right. So you'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? No. Wait, what? We won't be there Friday. We don't want to miss school Friday. They didn't want to miss school Friday. So me and Mike told them, we said, all right, if on this 3-day trip you want us to be at a campsite on Friday night, on Saturday we're going to have to hike up about 2,000 feet of elevation change, about a mile and a half and nothing but rock, and you're going to wish you weren't there. We got it. All right. So we get out there on Friday. We get through the first day. Some of the less experienced members of the team quickly realized this isn't Fall Creek Falls. This is for real. We get out there, we get through that 10 miles, everybody's exhausted. Me and Mike were hiking up the last hill to get to the campsite, and the two girls have you know, gotten there by car, they've walked into the campsite, they've met us there, and they kind of crest the hill as me and Mike are walking up. One of them stands there in yoga pants, the other one in jeans. We look at each other. This ain't going to be good, is it? Nope, it's not. We get up there, we get camp made, we get dinner made. We finally get to sleep. We get up the next day, And the very beginning of Saturday is about 2 miles straight down to the gorge and straight back up. It's nothing but rock. Half the time it's hands and knees climbing. You know, it's the person in front of you grabbing your backpack and hauling you up, the person below you pushing you up. I mean, it's not even hiking at this point. And in about 2 miles of an 11-mile day, they quickly realized that they're not in their element. And it's the same thing with people who are children spiritually. A lot of times on the spiritual journey, they get started, they hit that first wall, and they quickly realize, I don't know what I'm doing. I need some help. I'm out of my element. I'm out of my comfort zone. So they get through it. We get to the rim. On this 7-mile hike around, you see a lot of people stepping up to guide, guard, and direct them. I won't pick on Mike because he did it really well, and he's the only reason they aren't dead in the middle of wherever that was. Kind of dragging them along, you know, you can make it. You know, let me help you fix your backpack. You know, let me, you know, you need to hydrate. You need to do this. You need to do that. Kind of step by step. Mike was playing what's called sweep. And that's basically the really lucky guy who knows what he's doing, who gets to hike in the very back of whoever the slowest and least experienced is. I'm glad it was him, not me. So we're walking along. He's kind of pushing him along. We get through the 7 miles around the rim, and we're all dead tired, but especially these two girls. So we said, all right, now we get to hike to Hobbs Cabin. The hike to Hobbs Cabin still brings chills to my soul. We get ready for it. It's about 2 miles up, the last mile and a half being the most difficult. It's nothing but rock. Thousands of feet of elevation change. We've already been through, you know, 10 miles the rest of the day. And I'm going to be honest, nobody else in the world mattered a bit to me. All that mattered was that I put one foot in front of the other and I got up that hill. All that matters, I'm pretty sure I can see the end, and I'm putting one foot in front of the other till I make it. And the entire time I'm just thinking, why do I have all this extra gear because of these people who don't know what they're doing? I should not be carrying this much. Please, someone kill me. That's all I could think. That's all. That was it. That was the only thought going through my mind, and I turn around, and here's Mike, and Mike's knee was absolutely killing him. And he's standing there right beside one of the girls named Millie. And the entire time, with every step, encouraging her and making sure everything was right, making sure she was hydrated, making sure she should keep going. It's one foot in front of the other. There were the last two there. And I know he was completely miserable. And I know he wanted to push her off the side of that mountain. But he didn't. One foot in front of the other. And finally, she made it. And I bet she felt a lot of accomplishment. A lot of pain, but a lot of accomplishment. And we had finally made it. But those two girls were still exhausted. So that, in my opinion, is one of the best examples of someone taking their time, even though they're out, they're uncomfortable. They're hurting, but they know what to do, and they use their experience to guide, guard, and direct. Well, the next day, these two girls get up, and they don't want to be there. They are out of their comfort zone. Now they know it. Now there's no surprise. They know that they don't really, in their opinion, belong there. And they know they have 9 miles to get out of the woods. Well, Mike comes to me and he's like, all right, Carl, I've got to go ahead and I've got to get, you know, the cars. We had left some cars back at the beginning, so we were going to take one car back and get it. He's like, so I'm going to go with the fast group. He's like, so you can play sweep. I was like, great. Appreciate that, Mike. But I was like, yeah, no, I'll do it. I know what I'm doing. This will be easy. So it's me and the two girls and one of the teachers and a couple guys from school, and we get to going. Well, very quickly we realize that this is going to be an even longer day. Now, these two girls are tired. They really don't want to be there. One of them is bound and determined that the faster she runs, the faster she gets out of the woods. Any of you who have hiked any kind of distance know, ain't true. You can run as fast as you want. You're not getting out of there any faster. You just got to put one foot in front of the other. You got to find your pace, and you just got to get through it. So she was running ahead. And honestly, we never took the time to stop her. Never took the time to fix her gear. Never took the time to make sure she was hydrating other than maybe tossing her one of our water bottles when she didn't have enough. We just basically said, you got to get through this like the rest of us. So we kept on hiking, and there's only two spots where another trail meets this one. One is a fork, and either direction you go gets you back to the campsite. One isn't a fork. One is a cross trail that goes the opposite direction. Don't get ahead of me here. So we're heading down, we're trying to run her down. None of us are stopping her, none of us are checking her equipment. None of us particularly care that she's uncomfortable because the rest of us are tired too. So we get there and she's run ahead. She's sitting at what appears to be the fork in the trail. The fork in the trail and the turnoff are only about a quarter of a mile apart. But she was over to the other side of the trail and she jumps up and she says, "All right, which way to the waterfall?" Well, on this particular trail, once you got to the fork, either way you went, it was 2 miles back to the parking lot. But if you went right, there was a waterfall. So we said right. We didn't say, let's check the trailhead and see if this is the right trail. We never said, let's pull out this compass, which I always put right here so I always have it, and see if we're going the right direction. She jumped up, she took off. We jumped up and we took off after her. Well, about 4 miles later, we realized something's wrong. We thought maybe we're just tired, maybe it just seems farther. And all of a sudden, up ahead, we see a trail sign. You see us take off running. One of these days, I'm going to show you the video. I wish I'd had time to put it together. We take off running, we get there, ranger station, 4 miles. Both of them fall out right in the middle of the trail. Tears everywhere. I mean everywhere. I'm going to be honest, I laughed. Because at that point, what else are you going to do? You got to hike it. No helicopter is coming to get you. Hate to break it to you. So finally we get them up, we get them moving. And it's a funny story. But the thing is there were many times their experience would have been a lot better if, I'm going to pick on myself, if I had stopped to guide, to guard, and to direct them. And the honest answer is they may very well never step into the woods ever again. In fact, they told us they would never ever step into the woods ever again. And you think, that's a funny story, that's humorous, it's no big deal. But what happens if we do the same thing as spiritual leaders? What happens when we're too busy thinking about how hard it is on us, how bad it hurts, how hard these trials are, or we're too busy thinking about our struggles to stop and guide, guard, and direct people that we know need it? We see people all the time that we know are out of their comfort zone, that need just a little bit of help. But sometimes as spiritual leaders, we're too busy with our own fights to stop and help them. And you know what happens? They get lost, and they get hurt, and they get tired, and they don't want to be there anymore. So while this story is humorous, the same thing happened in our spiritual journey, and it's not funny at all. We can allow people to get to the point where they no longer want to be on that trail. They no longer want to be on that spiritual journey. They're done. And that's it. So as Christians, once we move past that point of spiritual milk, we get to that point of solid food, we have got to take it on ourselves to become those spiritual leaders. But we also have to be dedicated spiritual leaders. Even when it hurts for ourselves, even when our own struggles are tough, when we don't stop to help, when we don't stop to guide, guard, and direct, people get lost, and they get hurt, and they quit. And if someone never goes into the woods again, it's no big deal. But if someone decides that this spiritual journey isn't for them, that is a big deal. It's a very big deal. And I think that's our call as Christians. So once we get to that point, to be those guides, those guards, and those directors for others who are newer to this spiritual journey. So if you would like the opportunity to come and start on this spiritual journey, or maybe you're on it and you just need the help of some great guides, guards, and directors, and I know there's many of them in this congregation, or if you just need anything at all, will you please come while we stand and sing?